This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two as we roll along this morning. Glad you could be with us. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb. A lot more from week 14 of the National Football League. We'll talk to Jason Cole about that coming up at 7:40. I said at the top of the hour of hour one this morning, you know, this was a weekend where a lot of the teams that are on the bottom were making the teams at the top fight a little bit. The teams that were on the better side of the National Football League had to fight a bit. Some ended up beating teams. You know, the Texans didn't beat the Cowboys, but made them sweat, right? The Carolina Panthers did beat the Seattle Seahawks, a team that has been the pleasant surprise, and a Carolina team that is just kind of a mess right now, but still found a way and a running identity to go on and win that game. We like to see players in that are been superstars for a very, very long time. We kind of hope they go out on a high note. We hope that we never get to see their diminished ability. We hope it turns into something good. You know, we saw Peyton Manning get to a point where he barely could throw a football, but he left as a Super Bowl champion. So it is kind of painful a little bit for some, not for everybody, to watch Tom Brady struggle with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's fight in this team in a way that they have to continue to play to win a very bad division. While be it they are 6-7, they are still on top of the NFC South, and somebody is going to win that division and go to the playoffs. It might as well be them. It could be the Carolina Panthers. It could be the New Orleans Saints if they make a late run. But nevertheless, Tom Brady is struggling through two interceptions. He had four going into the game, but he had two interceptions yesterday against the San Francisco 49ers. And overall, the Buccaneers aren't playing very well. You know, they had that really nice comeback against the Saints, but they could have easily been on the losing end of that one, too, and made this division a lot more interesting. We knew the day would come where Brady didn't seem to be the athlete that would leave on a high note with gas still left in the tank. He seemed to always indicate that he would be going and going and going to a point where he would leave everything out, where you would see him struggle at a point in his career where he couldn't get out of it, right? The age, the deterioration, the wear and tear would just be too much of an obstacle, that he would never be able to recapture that. You always felt like he was the athlete that you would see him stumbling in center field, to use a sports cliche, before you would actually see him decide to retire early. That's what seems to be going on. But we'll see how this stretch run plays out for this very, very bad division. Good, the bad, and the dumb next.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Monday to you as we roll along. Got a lot of weekend of sports to dissect, but also news that's good, bad, and dumb. Let's get to the good of the day.
Well, the good of the day, we have to go all the way back to Friday.
Friday.
And then it continued on to Saturday. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm talking about the World Cup. And I know we're going to get to the bad side of the World Cup, but the good, maybe perhaps even great, were the quarterfinal matches that took place on Friday and then into Saturday.
I was all in.
They were, for any of you naysayers out there, it's like, oh, soccer's so boring. Just rewatch those. And if you didn't watch them the first time, great, because you're going to be at the edge of your seat. That Netherlands-Argentina game was perhaps one of the greatest one of the great moments in World Cup history.
Yeah, that was so cool to see the Netherlands score in that bonus time there, and then they just go to penalty kicks, and the two teams taunting each other, and Lionel Messi yelling at the referee, and then yelling at him even afterwards,
and yelling at the coach.
Yeah, just being
yelling
Messi
at the coach in the Netherlands,
knowing exactly who you are. That's pretty fun. It's pretty awesome.
But Saturday's games were kind of lackluster, except for the fact that you got Morocco beating Portugal, which was, nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Yeah.
Right? They were the first African country to make the World Cup semifinals ever?
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And France and England.
France and England was great.
It was a tasty matchup.
That was great. That was great. I called it the 100-minute war. It didn't catch on like I wanted it to, given they fought the 100-year war. It was a 100-minute war. And Harry Kane missed it, right? Missed the shot. Was that him? The one that missed the penalty kick?
Yeah.
They got all on him. So
yeah, that was unfortunate.
How does England feel like? When you get to the World Cup, it's so difficult. You don't expect to win the World Cup, right? No country expects to win the World Cup, right? There's just too many good teams. There's no heavy favorite, right?
Well, I mean, no.
I mean, you may expect it as a fan. I mean, realistically, you don't go, Alabama should win the national championship because
right.
there's only like you really have two or three teams that should win it.
I mean, you have like four teams. You know, every World Cup starts off with like four teams. Like, I could see them. You know, Brazil was one of them. France, yeah. who's still in, is one of them. Argentina is a favorite to win. You know, you have those teams that, you know, you kind of point your finger at saying, you know, these guys should win. But I think it's more like, especially when you get to the knockout stage, it's more like March Madness.
Yeah, it's very, yeah.
You know, Morocco's one of the hottest teams in the world right now, obviously, and they can't be stopped. They haven't been scored on.
So you've got,
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, so Croatia, Morocco, France, and Argentina. One of those four countries is going to win the World Cup.
And now for all you guys out there saying, oh, Croatia over Brazil, that was a huge upset. It's not.
They were in the finals last year.
They were in the finals 4 years ago.
4 years ago, last year.
Yeah, 4 years ago. But, you know, it was a shock because this Brazilian team was supposed to be, you know, they looked great.
They were great. They looked really awesome.
And so we kind of all pegged them like, this team's going to the finals. And I was saying all along, I thought it was going to be Brazil versus France.
I had to admit something here. I hate to admit this because I like sports and whatnot, but If the United States loses like basketball at the Olympics, I don't lose my mind over it. Like I don't go, oh, my life is over. Like I and if Michael Phelps doesn't win a swimming meet, or somebody doesn't win a medal in badminton or track and field, I don't go, oh, I'm destroyed.
But what you call in sick?
right. So the Olympics is more like fun. It's a bonus. If we win, great. If we don't, whatever. But there is so much passion for this. That it's got to be devastating to know I won't be here again for four more years.
I think that kid was crying.
Like I saw the picture of that kid crying. He's going to be dating girls by the time this thing rolls around again. Like it's that long of a time. It's not like, don't worry, you know, in 8 short months, training camp will begin for the next season. It's like, no, this is once every 4 years. And if you lose in the quarterfinals or the semifinals or the finals, we're not doing this again for another 4 years. You got to put up with that for 4 years. It's got to be devastating. Like to a point, like there's nothing we can equate it to here in the United States.
There really isn't.
You lose the national championship in college football. In a few months, spring ball is going to be around. Fall camp is going to be coming, and you get to go right at it again. Lose the NBA finals, same thing. Lose the March Madness, same thing. What do we have that's 4 years that we're so passionate about that we mentally break down when our country loses? Like, there's nothing really. Like, again, maybe Olympic basketball, but I don't even think people are that passionate about Olympic basketball. Yeah. Like you're not seeing people crying.
But even then, you have you'll have like world championships with a FUBO or Pan Am, like in basketball.
Yeah.
Like,
right?
They still have world championships.
Yeah, those events. Know, yeah, FIBA and all that stuff.
FIBA,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking of. FUBO.
Yeah, FIBA. Yeah, you still got those.
In soccer, you don't. In soccer, I mean, you know,
the
European
devastation of that of people in the stands. It was crazy. That's what it's about, man. Got to be the pressure on those penalty kicks is insane. They're insane. Like just standing there, I can't imagine needing to kick one. Even that goal is so big, but it must look like a little dot when you're under that much pressure. They had one Argentina kid was 21 years old.
Yeah.
Up there kicking for his country. You must have been like, wait, hold on, what? Nuts. Absolutely nuts. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. I never thought we'd see this day, but Tom Brady, post-game, signing autographs. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Not just any autograph. He's signing the ball that Dre Greenlaw of the 49ers intercepted.
That's amazing.
So after the game, Dre Greenlaw, who, you know, picked Tom Brady, I would keep the ball too. That's a souvenir. Went to Tom Brady and asked him for his autograph, and Tom Brady did sign the ball. And I literally was scratching my head like, I can't remember I don't think this ever would have happened.
It's
ever.
Nuts. It's nuts to be a kid growing up, watching him play, watching him win Super Bowls, playing him on Madden, or whatever else there is, and then you become a professional player, and then you intercept a pass he throws.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be wild.
And then but then afterwards, go and ask him for two autographs, yeah, said ball.
Yeah, like when we talk about, when I say things like, this guy's been famous my whole life, I've been around a while. These guys are young. They've watched Tom Brady play and win Super Bowls their entire existence. You know, it's like I didn't watch it, but I saw clips of the match, right? And it's just when you watch the guys kind of joking around, Tiger Woods and not Phil Mickelson, Rory, Jordan Spieth. And you think, like, Spieth grew up watching Woods play golf, and now here he is as a nearly 30-year-old man. Best friends. They're all tight. They're all friends. It's got to be weird to not to see your idol and become friends with your idol. I don't know if Dre Greenlaw is not his idol, but it's a guy he knows very, very well. As a guy, as he was learning to play football, was probably thinking, someday I'd like to intercept a pass from this guy. Good for Brady, though, for not blowing him off. Good for Brady, despite the loss, for understanding the moment.
It surprises me that this has to be Brady's final season, right?
It's got to be. I can't
that
imagine
second,
him wanting to do this.
I don't know if it was a second interception or third interception. He threw it right to the guy.
He's a free agent, so he could find him. He could find like a landing. People say he could land somewhere for 1 year, but what? Where? Like who? Who wants to disrupt whatever they're good at to bring Brady in at 46 years old? Like, yeah, he's still got it. He still can sling it. But do you want to disrupt whatever if you're the 49ers, for example? He could go to 49ers, but are you going to hold off Trey Lance another year just to bring in Brady? Like, there's a point where you got to go. You're going to have to go if you want to leave the Buccaneers. You're going to go to a team that doesn't need you. Like if you're gonna want to make one more run at a championship, that team is likely not short a good quarterback. But I don't know. I mean, how long does he want to do this? And it's got to be like for him to go, yeah, we're still leading the division, but we're 6-7, and we really don't have a fighting chance in half of these games we're playing in. It's got to be really frustrating. So. But yeah, I'm glad he look. If Dre Greenlaw had given the ball to a fan and that fan asked Tom Brady to sign it, he would have said, "Screw you."
Yeah,
right. But amongst your peers, you probably go, "Yeah, I'll sign it. No problem."
I mean, the only team I could see him signing for is doing that like that one day contract thing, signing with the Patriots just to retire.
Yeah,
that's
been a rumor, right?
That's the only thing I can
reuniting
see.
Reuniting with the Pats. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that little rumor, but we'll see. I mean, if anything, he's likely to go. If I'm going to do this one more year, I either want to play for a team where I don't mind being not the guy, or I'm going to be the guy on a team that's kind of close, but not quite close. We'll see what we can do. We'll see. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that there are several celebrities being sued for shilling NFTs.
Oh, really?
So
we're at full circle with this
thing now,
right?
We're at full circle now because I guess the NFT market crashed.
Of course it did.
Or burst. The bubble burst on the NFT market. I don't know. You know what?
No more money to launder? Is that what we're doing?
Pretty much, yeah. So there are people who are getting together a class action lawsuit against the likes of people like Steph Curry, Justin Bieber, Snoop Dogg, because they were all people who were shilling out NFTs. To this day, I still don't know what that is.
I have no idea what it is. Darren Rovell tried to explain it. People pointed out it was money laundering. I don't know if it's money laundering, but people pointed out it was. But Darren Rovell would point out, like, Bored Ape with Party Hat was worth $1.8 million.
That's the one that most people are going after because all these celebrities were, I guess, hyping up Bored Ape.
Yeah, right. But then somebody explained it as art. Like, some people said, look, it's not... I don't want to know. So don't get into a long explanation on Twitter about it. I don't really care. But people were saying a guy takes a $25 canvas and he splashes $6 worth of paint on it and it sells for $1.2 million. That's art, right? That's what it is. It's art.
Yeah, understand. Right? I don't understand.
So somebody makes Bored Ape and you may go, whatever this is. Some people go, there's value in this. Somehow there's value in this. I guess, but. I got to think, this is just me, and I don't know, this is just my speculation. I could be 100% wrong, and I'd be more than happy to be wrong on this. But I got to think if you're Gronk or you're Curry, who are some others you mentioned?
It was Curry, Snoop Dogg, Justin Bieber.
Yeah, okay.
Jimmy Fallon. I mean,
yeah. Right, these guys probably have it somehow worked into something that they're not responsible for this in their deal. I don't know. Can they? Do you think there's some sort of disclaimer that the company posted on that little tiny verbiage that you don't see in the ad,
I barely see,
that somehow they're not responsible for
this? One of my favorite stories, though, because I was reading this, was Seth Green.
Yeah.
Bought a Bored Ape NFT and then had it promptly stolen by a hacker.
See, I have zero idea how that happens. Right?
So, yeah. So, but my thinking about that was, like, who do you go to?
Yeah. Right.
Because I'm going to assume he spent some money on it.
Well, like somebody pointed out, like, I just right-clicked this Bored Ape and now I own it. And somebody goes, well, that's not how it works. And I'm like, well, then how does it work?
Right.
Like, what exactly is this then? Like, what are we talking about? But yeah, I'm curious to where that's going. But man, it's amazing how all that stuff.
See, I just don't know how do you.
Like, seriously.
It's not like a legit painting. That's the problem I have.
Right. Exactly.
You pointed out.
Jackson Pollock. Right?
I understand someone just throwing a bucket of paint on a canvas and selling it as art. I may not appreciate what's up there,
sure.
You know what? I understand. At least that's tangible. I understand that. I don't understand NFTs that.
Yeah.
You know, because what? They're just memes or GIFs, right?
That seems to be what it is.
And that somehow you own it? But I feel like I have a library of those that I could go to anytime and just post up there.
I know.
You know, am I breaking the law because I'm using it, not paying for it? I don't know.
It is amazing, man. It is amazing how, again, I said this before, we don't see Matt Damon telling me to be an explorer or an astronaut anymore. Those days are done.
You know what it was? It was almost as if there was people out there who were like, you know what? Let's fake a way to make money.
Right. Well, you know
or
what?
Or find a way to make fake money.
I know it's more complicated than this, but and I know we got to get to the dumb, but I feel
this is the dumb.
Oh, this is the dumb? Okay, yeah, that's right. It is the dumb. I feel like it's like the dot-com bubble. It's like the dot-com bubble burst, but everybody that was in it feels like they gave it a try. It just certain things that happened and it burst. There was no there and, you know, all of these things. But I feel like with this, I feel like it was a scam.
Yeah, like, from the very beginning.
Like, that's my thing. I feel like there were just, there's a group of people somewhere in the world laughing at everybody over all of this. And I know I'm oversimplifying this, but it feels like a lot of people got away with, let's convince them that they're like, you know, again, like they're like an explorer in the 1400s charting new lands. Ha ha ha. And then in the end, it was all phony.
Or, you know, just certain things like, you know, this one meme or GIF is being used all the time. And it's like, you know, turning to the person like, wouldn't you like to make money off your likeness there?
Yeah, right.
Let's monetize this. And by doing so, we'll just make up this whole system of, you know, these things are rare now.
Absolutely.
Or you can own it outright. I don't know. I don't get
crazy,
it.
Crazy. Well, we'll see where that one goes. All right. That is the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue. And we'll get to, the bad side of what happened in Qatar over the weekend when we continue on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It is Wake Up Call. All right, so the bad part of what we found out about the World Cup on the weekend is a longtime sports writer, Grant Wall, died at the age of 48 years old. He died covering the Argentina-Netherlands match on Friday. He collapsed. They rushed him to a hospital. He died. Okay. Grant Wall arrived in Qatar with a mission to cover the World Cup, but also to cover the extra things that the World Cup was meaning. He wore a rainbow shirt with a soccer ball on it to one of the matches early in the World Cup and was detained, talked to for 30 minutes, and then allowed back in. But then he also wrote a story about some migrant workers who died and the apathy of the Qatari government towards the death. He was exposing, again, things that we had talked about leading up to this World Cup that has been built on pretty much slave labor and a lot of exploitation. And this whole thing, which was kind of started through bribery, has led to a lot of misery for people who had to work on these stadiums in unbelievable heat and horrible conditions. Grant Wall was not afraid to expose that, as well as the beautiful game of soccer and the big event of the World Cup. He was not afraid to go mano a mano with the powers that be with this. So immediately when he died, Friday night especially, as it was kind of coming through Twitter that he had passed away, there was some speculation about what happened to him. Was he poisoned? How did he just die? Then there was a report that he had bronchitis. And so earlier in the week, he had bronchitis and he went to the medical center and he got treatment for it. And he was running on fumes, which is what happens when you cover these things. Like being a sports writer, there is a tremendous perk to the job. You get to go to all these places around the world, cover great events, but it is a tremendous amount of work. It is tremendous. You are there very early before a game starts. You are there very late when the game is over. You are talking to as many people as possible. And you're hoping as you're writing your story, you're not missing anything that somebody else got so that your story is as complete as possible. So you always cover all of your bases as much as you can. He was doing podcasts while he was there. He was posting audio. I mean, there was all sorts of things that he was doing in covering the World Cup. For I believe it was his own site, or who was he working for? Because he was working for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I think it was his own site.
Yeah, he actually got let go from Sports Illustrated. He fought pay cuts. At Sports Illustrated and left Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
They just parted ways. And I think he was starting his own thing. So he was doing all of that and whatnot. He said he was burning the candle at both ends. He actually had posted in his podcast, he had talked about having bronchitis and burning. But that didn't stop his brother. It didn't stop his brother from saying immediately that his brother was healthy, 48 years old, in really good shape. This is not something that should have happened. He shouldn't have just died. It did raise the speculation of what exactly went over there. I will tell you, the thing that creeped me out, not really creeped me out, but sort of made me go, oh, was when his family had to go to the government to say, get somebody on that body as soon as possible. Like, do not let the Qataris go near that body. Get that body for our own autopsy. And that's when I went, wow, there's something. They really think there was some foul play here. I don't know, because the story, that angle of the story died over the weekend. There were a lot of people on Friday that were like, they need to be looking into this. Somebody needs to look into this. And then over the weekend, it was more about celebrating the incredible life of Grant Wall. I will say this. Grant Wall was loved by, I think, everybody in the business.
Yes.
And that was the key. There were people who said, look, we didn't cross paths because he was doing college basketball early in his career. Then he was soccer. I'm an NFL guy. But we did run into each other a few times because he worked for Sports Illustrated. Wonderful guy. There were a lot of people that were like, I got my start because of Grant Wall. Grant Wall treated me like a colleague, even though I was working for a blog at the time, were blogs. There was a period of time, and I remember this. I remember when I covered the Broncos for a radio station, and I remember there were a couple of guys that were getting press passes to the Broncos, and they were writing blogs. And I'll never forget a bunch of us standing in the corner, and one of the guys I was with, an old-timer guy, was newspaper guy. I worked for the Rocky Mountain News at the time, was angry that they allowed a blogger into the press box. Like, who are these bloggers that get press pass access to the Broncos? Well, now you go to a press box, they're all bloggers, right? Everybody's working for a blog at some point. Either they're working for a paper or they're working for a blog. But can you imagine being a writer like Grant Wall? You're 22 years old. You just graduated Princeton. You are in Sports Illustrated. He got a job at Sports Illustrated like immediately, which was really difficult to do. But he was so talented, he was able to get a job at Sports Illustrated. There's a little bit, there's anybody else, like anybody would feel a lot of ego and a lot of pride that you had that sort of accomplishment. And you're being sent around the country. And that's in the 90s. And you've got like 10 years under your belt. You're in your early 30s. And all of a sudden, bloggers are asking you for advice and career advice, and you work for the best sports newspaper in the country, and he treated them like they worked for that publication. He treated those people who were sort of the outcasts of the media at the time as if they were one of his own, and he treated them as colleagues. He treated them as equals, when a lot of people weren't treating people as equals. I almost joke sometimes that there was a time where people who did podcasts were almost laughed out in the radio business. Now everybody has a podcast. Like, there was the same thing with writers. You either worked for a publication or you blogged, and people who blogged were laughed at. Now everybody works for blogs. But Grant Wall could see that a mile away, and there were people who owed their careers, who later turned those blogs into something awesome and turned those blogs into careers with publications, or kept their blogs and made it successful. But there were people who were really cheering. I don't know where this story is going to go, man. I don't know. Do you think there is going to be something to look into?
Well, I have no idea. But I mean, just recently, like in the last 24 hours, a Qatari photojournalist has passed away as well.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
What's happening?
I don't know.
Oh, goodness. Well, we'll get back to that in hour three. But Jason Cole is coming up next. We'll talk week 14 in the NFL as we continue this wake-up call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know, one of the things that happens sometimes in sports is we get some sort of really, really crazy story and we go, wow, that's nuts where that person was this time a year ago or 6 months ago or 3 months ago or whatever. And Baker Mayfield was certainly one of those stories. To think that he started the week and he had been released by the Carolina Panthers, picked up by the Rams, who just happened to be in quarterback hell. And then all of a sudden he throws, leads two touchdown drives. Cam Akers scored on a run in the first one. And then he threw a touchdown to Van Jefferson and they win. Those are the kind of things that happen in sports. We got Jason Cole ready to go on our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com. How are you, Jason?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So week 14, we're at the point now where there are movers and shakers as we shake some things out. But it seemed like yesterday there were a lot of teams on the bottom end really, really sticking it to teams on the above end. Do the Cowboys seem more vulnerable because they had a tight game against the Texans, or is this just this league at times?
I think it's the league, but I also think it's the Cowboys. Do you ever really trust the Cowboys?
No, I don't.
Right.
Right.
No. Right. So they eternally, especially they get on a little run where they're starting to play really, really well. And it's like they all of a sudden think, okay, well, we're ready to win a Super Bowl. Just put us in the Super Bowl right now. It's like, no, you know, like there's some steps that you have to go through to actually win a Super Bowl. You haven't won a title. And that's just, it's a mentality that permeates everything that they do. And I really think it starts at the top. They just believe, you know, like Jerry believes this is the year we're going to win a title. It's all going to happen right now. And just automatically goes there instead of following the process. And the team does the same thing as well. So yesterday did not surprise me. I'm only moderately disappointed that the Cowboys actually came back and won that game, because it would have been just so fantastic for them to lose.
Oh, no doubt.
Houston. That would have been so delicious to watch if they had actually lost that game.
It would have been such meal for so many people who are ready to do what you just said, just jump off the ship. They're like hanging around, but then that one moment where they can jump off, when they jump off, the Cowboys get attacked like no team in the league.
Right. Oh. They are goldfish or piranhas.
Without question. Yeah. On the flip side of in the division, the Eagles. Boy, it was a good story for a while, and now it is a real Super Bowl-level team. At what point did you look at this team and say, you know what, there's so many good pieces in place. I'm not waiting for the wheels to fall off. This really is a legitimate Super Bowl-contending team.
I remember, back in October, I was talking to Doug Peterson about Jalen Hurts. He was talking to Jalen Hurts. And he just was really, really impressed with him. And I said, okay, this Jalen Hurts is for real. He may not be complete, but he's for real. And if I trust in the quarterback, if you look at everything else that they are, they don't have any glaring weakness. If they don't have anything to say, that's not going to work. Right? Where they just terrible spot, and they can get it back. And the other thing that they've done consistently, and you have to believe in it now, is with the exception of a game that they lost against Indianapolis, if I remember correctly, they don't turn the ball over. They don't make a lot of mistakes that hurt you, so they don't beat themselves. And the biggest thing that happens in this league for good teams is that they do things that beat themselves. So a very complete team with a extremely competent quarterback, in maybe not the best quarterback in the league, but a very competent quarterback on the rise, and they don't make mistakes. So I believed in them pretty much since October. Now, I didn't think that they were going to get to this point with only one loss, but it doesn't shock me.
With the Tennessee Titans, now it's three straight losses. They just fired John Robinson. It feels now that they're in a very vulnerable position to have a good season kind of go by the wayside. What do you think of what's going on in Nashville?
I'm really curious about the Robinson thing. Obviously, it's a power play between him and Vrabel,
sure.
Right? Unless he did something personally to ownership that was an affront or demanded something. But when you fire your GM during the season, you're kind of saying to your team something is functionally wrong, and it's making people nervous for no reason. It's like creating a distraction off to the side. Now, they are flawed because they don't have great receivers. I mean, they should have better receivers, right? But they don't have great receivers, and it's showing up. They were expecting way too much out of the rookie. And he's been A, hurt, and B, he's a rookie. So he's been inconsistent with Treylon Burks, right? And Robert Woods is a good player, but he's coming back from injury. So to me, there's a combination of things that are going on here that have made them extremely flawed. The play-action game is not working as well as it used to. They've taken a dip since, Arthur Smith left, almost 2 years ago now. But they've taken a dip offensively since losing him as their offensive coordinator.
Do you think the Jets are done with Zach Wilson, or are they just done this year without Zach Wilson and want down the road to see what they could develop as a quarterback? It seems like all signs are pointing to they don't want anything to do with him. But I've seen organizations change like that in the past.
I think you have to give that kind of arm challenge and what you invest in him. You have to give him another chance. You can't give him another chance until he proves to the teammates that he's worked hard to get the position back. And I think that's an off-season thing. I don't think you can change that perception in the middle of a season. Now, I could be wrong, and he could be showing up at 5 in the morning to study tape and get ready and learn. Because the biggest problem was not the quote where he didn't mention responsibility. That was the most glaring thing out there. But the fact that he doesn't know the plays and what he's supposed to do on those plays, he wasn't ready, was he really lost faith from his teammates. I mean, that stuff with Dwayne Brown, where he's getting angry because he knows the ball is supposed to be gone and he's still having a block, and he's having Zach Wilson basically run his way into a sack. It exemplifies how everybody on the team thinks about him. And again, to learn the offense, you just need to spend time. So you have to show people that kind of stuff, and then show it on the practice field as well. So that's, again, it's not a flip of the switch kind of thing to me. It requires a lot of effort to rebuild that.
Yeah. Let's get to the Lions. Let's get to the Lions and Vikings. Let's get to both of those teams. I love what the Lions are building. I think they're fun. They're a fun team to watch. They're flawed. Sure, mm-hmm. They're 6-7. They're flawed. They're fun. On the flip side, the Vikings, they're 10-3, but people like the Cowboys. They're just like, they don't trust them enough. This team gives up a tremendous amount of yards, yet they're 10-3. That game yesterday was sort of that sort of thing in process. You saw the Lions be able to score. They give up points, but they can score points, but the Vikings give up a lot of yardage.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings are, they're very lucky to be 10-3.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line, right? I mean, they're not a very good team. They have two terrific players. You know, one, you know, potentially the best receiver in the game in Justin Jefferson, and a really good running back in Dalvin Cook, and then they have a league average quarterback. You can go a fair distance with that. So they should be a playoff contender with that and everything else. So they should not be 10-3. And that was, you know, proven out yesterday against the Detroit team, which is a really perfect mix. They can run the ball very effectively in a league where most run defenses are pretty weak right now. They don't defend very well either, but they've gotten a little bit better, and they can control the tempo of games. Like I said in advance of the Thursday Thanksgiving game, when they played against Buffalo, like they're going to give Buffalo a lot of problems, and they did. And they took because of the way that they can control the tempo of the game. So give Dan Campbell a lot of credit for coming up with a very simple design that works for both him and for his quarterback, who is very play-action dependent. I mean, Jared Goff needs a running game to accentuate what he's good at. And when they can't run the ball and they have to lean on Jared Goff a lot, they get into a little bit of trouble because he's not a straight drop back, let's wing it all around kind of player on a consistent basis. So I don't believe in the Vikings, even though they have the number two seed in the NFC right now. And I do believe that Detroit is on their way. You know, I think it'd be really fun if they made the playoffs this year. And then all of a sudden we're talking about Dan Campbell as a coach of the year candidate.
No doubt. No doubt. Jason Cole, he's also the author of Elway, A Relentless Life. Don't forget, it's holiday time. So not only football fans, Bronco fans and whatnot, Elway, A Relentless Life. You can find it at Amazon and bookstores. Jason, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
You're good. You got it, brother. Take care. Jason Cole. I agree with him. I just think it would be fun. Listen, guys, you know I'm a Steeler fan. I pull for teams during the season. I try to keep it as neutral as possible, but I have my own personal opinions. But we've been on this Lions team for 2 years now. Ever since the strip down and the Matt Stafford trade and the rebuild, Dan Campbell's initial biting kneecaps at the beginning of last season, this sort of thing where, who is this guy? What is this guy about? Wait a minute. Hold on. He might be our favorite coach, like the way he talks. But remember last year, they were, what, 0-10-1 at one point? And then they won like three of their final six. And while they won three of the final six, it was like, okay, you're winning some games. But then they were on Hard Knocks. And then you started seeing something where if you watched Hard Knocks, and some of you don't, I get it. It's a repeat thing. It's the same formula every single year. But you do get to get into personalities. And you get to see the Lions, and they were trying to build something. But you know what happened? As the season was going on in the beginning of the year, the Lions were losing games like people thought that they would lose games, right? They were just, at one point, they were 1-6. And you were like, well, you know what? They're not good, right? They got shut out by the Patriots, and they got blown out by the Cowboys, and they lost a shootout to Seattle because they couldn't close the game out, and they lost a battle with the Vikings because they couldn't close the game out. But they were 1-6, and then they started winning. And not only did they start winning, they started looking like a team that could beat you if you're not careful, no matter how good you are, like the Minnesota Vikings. Or the Buffalo Bills, who had to drive late on Thanksgiving Day to get that win, to drive late at the end. So they gave Buffalo a really good fight. But now at 6-7, it's an outside chance, but look what they got. They got a Jets team where Mike White was in the hospital and Joe Flacco might have to start a quarterback. A Panthers team that, yes, they beat Seattle, but still, right? I mean, Bears, Packers, like there's four games here that I wouldn't say any of those teams a clear cut, beat the Lions, no problem. I don't think there's anybody like that. I don't think there's anybody like that. So could they make a run and win the rest of the game, get to 10-7 and be in the picture? Sure. Likely? I don't know. It's a lot to ask in the waning weeks of December. But nevertheless, they're a lot more fun. They're a lot more fun than I thought. And Jared Goff might actually be their starting quarterback. Instead of waiting for the guy, who are we going to get in the draft? Who are we going to develop? Jared Goff might actually be the guy down the road, young enough to be that guy. All right, we'll continue as Wake Up Call progresses as we continue along this morning.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again, the birthday of the late, great Frank Sinatra, December 12th, would have been 107 this morning. If he lived that long, nevertheless.
The young age.
Young age. Nevertheless, Francis Albert Sinatra. A very good song, of course.
Probably his most famous?
Yeah, he's got a bunch of them. That's probably, yeah, probably one people.
Like most people
My
know.
My Way is probably one of the top ones. But a lot of good ones. I have about 25 Sinatra CDs that I don't get to use anymore because I don't have a CD player. Just sitting around.
Now you just go, Alexa.
Yeah, right?
Turn it, play.
I'm a huge Sinatra fan, so I'm a really, really big Sinatra fan. And so I have a disc from 2000 that I made myself, and it has all of my favorite Sinatra songs that I got on Napster. Remember Napster?
Of course.
Are you too old? You're not old. You're not too old to remember Napster. Play around.
I'm old. So, what are you talking about?
I don't know. I mean, I know you're young, but I
like a few years younger than you. Come on now.
No. Well, you paused there for a second that made me go, does he know what I'm talking about?
No, right, Napstered. I don't know what the verb for Napster is, but I did it.
So I was working for this basketball team at the time. We used Napster for everything. Every player that wanted something for like the warm-up music, like that's where we went and got it. So we asked all the players, like, hey, guys, on your warm-up music, what are you looking for? And they would give us some songs, and we went to Napster, and we just got them off Napster, and we would burn CDs. I got a CD burner. I was one of the first people in my radio station that had a CD burner, and I'm so thankful my parents got this for me because it was remember the old CD burners that took forever to burn a CD? They weren't included in your computer.
Nope,
they were an external thing.
Yep.
And it took forever, but you got a CD. And I remember I was the most popular guy at the radio station.
You know, you remember when they first started including it with your computer?
That's like, right.
Comes with a CD burner.
It came with a CD burner. That was like, all right, now we're doing. But I had the external one, and every disc jockey in my cluster, we had six stations, came to me and like, man, I'll give you guys, you and your wife can go out to see this show or go to dinner. Like, they gave me all sorts of coupons to burn their best bits on a CD so they could send them out. Yeah, but I still have this old Napster burnt Sinatra CD that I still have. I created the cover for it on Photoshop. It was good times. Happy birthday, Frank.